Morning, I'd like to call this meeting of House Fisheries to order. It is 8:37 on Wednesday, January 30th. And President or Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson, Representative Edgman, myself, Chair Seaton. At this time, I want to remind everybody about their cell phones and address any questions through the chair. Today, we're going to hear scallop management proposal from ADF&G. And in conjunction with that, we had a request from CFEC to bring up HB 16, which is extend the limited entry sunset date for scallop and Korean hair crab. We closed public testimony on HB 16 on May 4th. We will have invited testimony from the CFEC on that information. After several hearings on the bill, the sponsor does not intend to ask for that bill to be moved, and the chairman does not intend to move the bill. There seems to be some confusion among people as to whether we need to prepare for state management of those fisheries and the sunset, at least through this bill, will take place, and state management will need to accommodate that, and that's what this meeting is here for. We have the scallop management. I don't believe that there's been any attempt to look at Korean hair crab management, because Korean hair crab has not been open since this program went into place, and the information we have from the department, and they can clarify that with us today, is that there is no stock viability at this point in time to anytime in the foreseeable future have a Korean hair crab management opening as well. With that, is there anything come before the committee before we start? Seeing none, let's start with Mr. Hilsinger. Would you come forward? Welcome, and would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And by the way, the committee should have in their packets two. There is a letter from the United Fishermen of Alaska, and we have two things from the Department of Fish and Game. One is July 7th, 2007, which was answering a number of questions that were addressed in our last hearing, and also we have their PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you, Mr.
And
Chairman.
Before you start, I wanted to recognize that Representative Ledoux has joined.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Hilsinger. I'm the director of the Commercial Fisheries Division, and I wanted to give you an update on what the progress toward developing management options for the scallop fishery. In the absence, or under the assumption that HB 16 does not pass, the department did support the vessel-based limited entry system when it came in, and we continue to support HB 16. In the absence of HB 16, there would be no limited entry system in state waters unless the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission were to implement a study and then implement some other form of limited entry. So state waters would be open to entry. The waters, federal waters outside of 3 miles, would continue to operate under the federal license limitation program. At the current time, we don't really have a good estimate of how many boats may fish in state waters if it does go to open entry. In anticipation that HB 16 may not pass, the department asked the Board of Fisheries to take up and consider changes to the scallop management plan for state waters, excuse me, which the board will do at their meeting coming up March 3rd through 9th. in Anchorage. The state ADF&G staff statewide has met several times and developed some management options, so the material that I'll be presenting to you today has been developed by all the staff in the state from the regions that have scallops, which are westward, central, and southeast. Besides the ADF&G proposals, the public also, of course, is welcome to submit ideas for management, and there are some parts of the management that proposals would have to come from the public. They're highly allocative issues that the department normally is neutral on or does not propose, and so there would be an opportunity on some of the things for the public to go ahead and suggest additional management options. The difficulty really in managing the fishery under the open entry system in state waters is that there's three centrally located scallop beds where the boundary line goes through the bed, and there's scallops on both sides of the line, and those are at the Shelikof Strait near Kodiak, the Kayak Island fishery near Prince William Sound, and the Yakutat fishery there at Yakutat. And what we see as being necessary in these three situations is that we would have to essentially manage each one of those beds as two separate areas. There would be a state waters area and a federal waters area that would be managed separately. So the management options that the staff will be proposing to the Board of Fisheries, first of all, they're not proposing any changes to the statewide Alaska Scallop Management Fishery Management Plan. This is the basic statewide plan that provides the ability to require observers and set bycatch limits. It also sets dredge size limitations, dredge number limitations, crew member limits, and requires things like hand shucking. And we would continue to manage these fisheries based on guideline harvest levels. So the approach we plan on taking is to propose regional management plans, one for Shelikof Strait, one for Kayak Island, and one for Yakutat. And there may end up being some minor differences among these plans, depending on what the board does, and also depending on whether there are any minor differences among the regions. But all of the staff are in agreement on some basic concepts, and all these management plans will incorporate the same basic concepts. The first being that we would like to see a registration year set from April 1st through March 31st. That would encompass the scallop fishing season. And we would also like to see a registration deadline for state waters on April 1st. And what that means is that a boat that wanted to fish state waters for scallops would have to register by April 1st, or they wouldn't be able to fish for that year. And there's a couple reasons why we wanted that registration deadline. One is to give the staff time to assess the level of effort and see whether they thought it was too high in a given area, and determine whether the fishery could be opened or not. As I said, right now we don't have a real good feeling for how many boats may participate, and it may vary from area to area quite a bit. The other reason for the deadline is to give the staff time to set up the observer program. Each scallop vessel that would fish these beds is required to carry an onboard observer, and those observers have to be identified, approved, and trained before they start their duties on board a vessel. And Typically, we use observer contractors who have to identify the individuals who would be suitable for this work, and they have to be approved. And then there's about a two-week training program each year. And so that time period between April 1st and July 1st, when most of the seasons start, would give us time to get those observers trained and ready to go. Then we would ask that vessels would either register for state waters or federal waters, and they would have to fish in the waters for which they're registered. So, for instance, in Shelikof Strait, you would either be registered for Shelikof Strait District state waters or Shelikof Strait District federal waters. To register for federal waters, of course, you'd have to have a federal permit. For state waters, you would get a limited entry commission interim use permit for state waters. And then we would set separate guideline harvest levels for state waters and federal waters.
Excuse me. Representative Ledoux had a question.
Why would you make it so that if you were registered for state waters, you couldn't fish in federal waters, and federal waters, you couldn't fish in state waters?
The reason that we set it up that way, and that wouldn't be for the whole season. You could change. So over the course of the season, you could fish both state and federal waters, but at one time, you would have to fish where you're registered, and that's so that we know where the catch is coming from, because if we have a separate guideline harvest level for state waters, we don't want scallops from federal waters getting mixed into the catch totals, which, you know, then if it did, could close state waters sooner. So in order to keep the catch accounting separate, you want the boat to register for an area, fish in that area, report their catch out of that area.
Well,
Representative Ledoux,
wouldn't you still be able to do that? I mean, with simply reporting requirements, and also if you have observers on board, and I think there may be something in here that says something about observers, you know, that would kind of monitor it to make sure people are reporting from the right areas, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, that helps a lot, but the observers are not monitoring 24 hours a day. They have a work day that they work, and so there's a lot of the day when the vessel may be fishing when they're not actually monitoring where the boat, because they're asleep or eating or other things. So while it helps quite a bit, the staff felt that they really needed to have the boat registered for an area. And then they did have a change, a registration change provision, which basically would say that for a boat, if they wanted to switch and say fish in federal waters, if they would call us 12 hours in advance and then shuck all their scallops and report that harvest on their fish ticket from state waters, then they could move over into federal waters. So we tried to be as flexible as we felt we could be at allowing them to move between state and federal waters on the same trip while still trying to keep the harvest accounting separate between the two. So we would envision that the state and federal waters would have separate guideline harvest levels. They'd be managed separately, so if the guideline harvest level in state waters was reached, that area would close, but that wouldn't necessarily close federal waters. People could still continue to fish, and vice versa. If the federal limit was reached first, people could still fish in state waters. And this will be a little bit difficult. We don't have good stock assessment data for how much of the stock resides in state and federal waters for at least two of those beds, Shelikof Strait and Yakutat. For the Kayak Island bed, we do have surveys which we could use to set the guideline harvest levels for each area. So initially, the guideline harvest levels for Shelikof Strait and Yakutat would be set on our data on the historical distribution of catch between those areas. And then as we develop our stock assessment techniques in the future, we could get that information and estimate stock size in each area and set a guideline harvest level that was better represented the actual biomass.
And Mr. Hilsinger, do I recall right that the historic data is about 40% coming from state waters? I mean, I don't know in which beds those are, if that's just a combination of the beds. I presume the department has reporting of by individual areas, since, you know, Shelikof and Kayak Island be quite dissimilar.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have catch accounting for each of those areas, and the difficulty is that oftentimes in the past, a single tow comes from both state and federal waters. They tow and they do a continuous tow, sort of in a big oval shape. And so they may, one part of the tow may be in state waters and one part may be in federal waters. So, and we know where the tow started and where it ended. And so the catch accounting of what came out of state waters is not by any stretch perfect, but on the overall average, it comes out about 30%, I think, in state waters and about 70% in federal waters.
And Mr. Hilsinger, isn't your problem actually less than the problem with something like black cod, which we manage in state waters off the Kenai Peninsula, or gray cod, where not only do the vessels move from areas, but you have the stock moving back and forth. So at least in the future, you'll be able to have some assessment rather than an overall biomass that's moving back and forth between the two areas?
Right, Mr. Chairman. That's one nice thing about scallops. The beds are fairly well identified, and they stay pretty much in the same place from year to year, and you can do the stock assessment. And I think we'll be able, once we develop that, we'll be able to have a fairly good assessment of what's in state waters versus what's in federal waters.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
The other thing that we would have to separate would be the crab bycatch limits. And some of these areas have both king and tanner crab bycatch limits. Some have only a tanner crab bycatch limit, depending on whether both species or only one species are present in the scallop bed. And we would try to do that based on the information we have on distribution from our crab surveys.
On your bycatch limits, how are those set up right now in scallops? When they reach a certain bycatch amount, does the season close for the year? Does it close for a time period? Is it strictly an accounting procedure like with the trawl catch of king salmon, where it doesn't close the fishery, it just enumerates it? Can you tell us the mechanism of the crab bycatch on the different species?
Mr. Chairman, if the crab bycatch is reached, that would close the fishery. What's happened in practice is that the scallop fishermen have become pretty adept at where to fish, and so they, it's my understanding, they rarely, if ever, actually reach the bycatch limit. There's a real incentive for them to stay away from the crab, and so they don't trigger that bycatch limit, and that's what they do. Those limits are set based on population estimates of king and tanner crab in those areas. And so they may vary quite a bit between the two species. Just as an example, in the Shelikof Strait District, the king crab limit is 1,200 king crab, while the Tanner crab limit is 84,000, and those are based on a percentage of the estimated population size of those animals in that area.
And are those bycatch on adults, or are those on a animal, juvenile or adult, or is it a size specific?
Mr. Chairman, it's any king or Tanner crab, regardless of size. As I mentioned, the staff would like to see a 12-hour notice for changing registration. That would give the vessel time to shuck all the scallops and weigh them and get their report on their fish ticket before they change areas. And that's something that the observer certainly could monitor to make sure that all the scallops were shucked before they switched areas.
Mr. Hilsing, a question on the testimony that we had from the people that fished the state water fisheries. They suggested either a 10 or a 12-foot dredge, and mostly in federal waters they're using what, 215 or 216-foot dredges. So I'm trying to figure out how your on the same trip would work, because you're going to have illegal gear if you went from federal waters where you'd have 30 or 32 feet of dredge on board, and then you would go into state waters where you have a limitation of a 10 or a 12 foot dredge. Do you see any conflict there, or are you looking at the participation the other way, so that if someone was fishing state waters with a 10 or 12 foot dredge, they could, if they had a federal permit, could then participate in federal waters because they wouldn't be over the legal gear?
Mr. Chairman, if the board were to adopt a different dredge size limitation in state waters, there would be some enforcement issues and conflicts between state and federal waters. The staff is not going to propose dredge size limitations at the current time, partly because it's highly allocative and partly because we think that the plan that we've developed will allow us to manage the fishery. And that, of course, depends on how many vessels fish in state waters, and so it's certainly available to any of the fishermen that want to propose that, and the board would certainly consider it. But it does create a problem if you see in the various fisheries there's different ways of handling. sometimes you're limited on. Sometimes you can have more than one unit of gear on board, but you could only fish one unit of gear. Sometimes you're not allowed to have two units of gear on board when you fish. The Board of Fisheries would have to work all that out and decide. It's 215-foot dredges is what the limitation now in the statewide management plan is. And so if the Board of Fisheries adopted, say, a 115-foot dredge limit or something like that, they would have to also then adopt regulations to govern what would happen to a boat that had 215-foot dredges, if they would have to go back to town and take one off before they could fish in state waters, or if they could have both on board as long as they didn't fish one of them, or they would have to work that out in the regulations.
Okay, and I just like to point out that it's a common technique that's used where you're at all worried about over harvest, whether it's Bristol Bay and having one net on board, or Cook Inlet having one unit of gear on board, or whether it's whether you're crab fishing and you get the limited number of pots, and if you have more than that you're illegal, that all of the people that fish the state waters have proposed either 10 or 12 foot limitation on the gear, and if you would expand that out to 215-foot dredges, you are going to, of course, be expanding out the speed and the number of vessels that might potentially participate in this. So it seems like that the very thing that some people are raising, it would be an unlimited fishery and might be hard to regulate. It seems like if you don't use the techniques that have been proposed by all the people that have been participating in state waters, that is limiting the size and the number of dredges, that you're actually feeding into the very problem that you've identified as, you know, the fishery might expand and you don't know how many participants in it. It seems like the department would get a lot better handle if they went with what has been proposed by the fishermen that is limiting those, and then if that's not a problem, opening it up further in future years. So I'd just like to get a little more analysis from you later on the reasoning for that and how that interacts with the number, with your primary concern about maybe being too much participation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We also envision daily reporting, and we would start off with daily reporting. If it did turn out that wasn't necessary, we wouldn't have to continue that. I think now we have 3 times a week, and we certainly would be willing to relax that if it turned out we didn't have a large influx of boats. We also would be proposing a VMS requirement. There's been some developments on that front. For a number of years, we've been trying to get access to the National Marine Fisheries Service Vessel Monitoring System database, and we weren't able to, but now we do have access to that. I went over last week and had a tour of how the system works, and we're signing up our area shellfish and groundfish staff to have access to that. So we see that in concert with the observer data being a definite benefit in determining whether boats are fishing across the line or are, you know, staying on the side of the line that they're registered for. And finally, depending on the area, there may be some adjustments to closed waters. Some of these areas, their scallops are fairly well identified where they're at, and one of the things, given the potential increase in the number of vessels, is that we'd like to keep vessels on the scallop beds and not have a lot of prospecting with dredges in areas where there aren't scallops, and so there may be some adjustments to what the closed waters are in order to prevent that, and that's a case in the Shelikof, and I'm not sure if the other areas would need that or not, but that's one of the things that the staff is looking at. And again, that this is, I guess, the statewide staff's best assessment of a plan that will work given what they would expect to have for effort in state waters. Again, we're not sure exactly how many boats we'll have, but they feel that this program would give them the ability to manage the fishery and meet guideline harvest levels. And if there are other more allocative types of conditions that the fishermen would like to see, we're certainly willing to consider those and give the board an assessment of the pros and cons of those and what kinds of effects they might have on the fishery. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and if you don't have it, the committee will forward to you the testimony that we had from the individuals. I think we have all individuals that fish state waters testified, have sent in written testimony to us on those dredge sizes and limitations, so we can get those to you if you don't already have those. One question I had on VMS, some of the testimony that we had was that currently the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council did not require VMS on federal scallop. Have you been in contact with the council to see if that would be added to the federal guidelines as well? I think that they all said they basically had it, but they're not required to. They said that they had, they give their access to their track lines and all to the observers as well, but is there a coordination there that needs to come forward?
Mr. Chairman, the state actually has the management delegation from the federal government, and so the regulations, our regulations are in effect clear out to 200 miles, so if we require it, then all the federal boats would be required to have it in federal waters. And while there's some fisheries where we feel that the cost of VMS would be a burden, given the value of the fishery, this is not one of those, and we think with the value of the fishery and the management needs, it certainly would be reasonable to consider requiring VMS. And apparently, actually, the price is coming down on the units. And so, yeah, we thought that would be a reasonable thing, and it would apply both in state and federal waters.
Good. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I see some additional work for the department and maybe some additional employees. If you had an opportunity to sit down and see exactly what it would cost to implement this plan that you've outlined?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, no, we really haven't yet. If the current management plan stayed in effect, there would be no additional cost, but with the changes, there could be some. And one of the, I guess, since we're on the budget, one of the real problems that we have is that approximately $500,000 of our scallop stock assessment and research money is in those federal grants that have been zeroed out. And so we are preparing increments for submission into the state system for to get funding to cover that. And you know, we will have, a significant problem if we don't get that money.
Representative John.
But that's regardless of implementation of this plan. You'd have to do that anyway.
Right, that's correct.
And you know, when I look through it and I hear you, I see, you know, additional, and there's always a price tag on that. And I'd be interested in knowing, and you don't, you know, provide it to me or through the committee, however you want to do it. I'd be, if you can even get to this point this early, as to a cost of implementing that plan, I can't see anything coming for free. And you start managing more intensely, I think that's going to have a price tag, and I'd like to get a ballpark. And it doesn't need to be exact, but just something that we could look for in a supplemental next year, I think, is probably where we'd see it.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions? And I'd like to recognize that Representative Wilson has joined us. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I notice on the department's July 7th letter here, it speaks about working in concert with federal officials in order to assure that the state retains management of these waters. Just a quick question, how that actually works. Do you report to the North Pacific Council, or do you sort of, is there a corresponding relationship while this is the regulations or the policies are being enacted?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, yes, there's a scallop plan team that reviews the scallop fisheries and what's needed in the federal fishery management plan, and they review the stock assessment, and we're real active participants. We have a large number of staff that work with that scallop plan team, and we report to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council on how the fishery is going. And because it is under, at least the federal portion of it is under a delegation from them, so we work pretty closely with them on scallops.
So just as a
Representative Edgman, follow up.
If House Bill 16 doesn't pass, then how is all this going to play out working with the council in terms of a timeline?
I don't see that changing much because Of course, in the absence of HB 16, then the changes would be within state waters, and the federal waters would still be, would still be subject to the federal license limitation. I guess if the Board of Fisheries wanted to have the same regulations in state and federal waters, we would have to talk to them about that, and I don't know whether that might have some effect on it, if their delegation. I think that my understanding is they're not prepared or able to manage scallops in federal waters. But if we did something that was inconsistent, say, with the Magnuson-Stevens Act, that there could be some interaction there that could change things in the future. And I don't have a good feel for that right now until we get a management plan in effect and see how they would react. But we should run all this by them, I think, before the board meeting, just to see if there are any obvious red flags in what we're proposing. I don't think there are right now, but that would be a good readout to have. And then again, after the board adopts regulations.
And Mr. Hilsinger, is it, just for everybody's understanding, there's many, many fisheries in the state that are managed on state water, federal water. I mean, we have the Pacific cod fishery. We even have the IFQ sablefish fishery, where we have a open access state water fishery on the outside of the Kenai Peninsula and the Aleutian Islands. And in the federal waters, we have a federal IFQ fishery taking place at the same time in the same area. And, as well as having the black cod, sablefish in Prince William Sound, state waters management, southeastern states waters management. So it's not just for consistency. It's not that this is an unusual fishery that's going to be changing a lot. And, in fact, like we just talked about a few minutes ago, this in some ways is much easier to manage because the stock is not a mobile stock that transfers back and forth with either tide or season between the two waters. So following up a little bit on your question there. Does anyone else? One direct representative Holmes has joined us. Is there any other questions? Anybody have any questions? Representative Johansson.
We may have gone over this in the going on, I think, 6 hours of testimony and deliberation on this bill and the 2 inches of paperwork that I have to my right. But if you would indulge me and make it crystal clear in my mind, I read in our resident journalist's newsletter about Mr. Big, and I think that's what this really is all about, is in suit with the state over their application for a permit. What is the effect on whether this bill passes or not? What does that do for that vessel? I mean, if this bill doesn't pass, what happens? Are they allowed to come in and, as was described by Governor Knowles, as a pirate ship, basically, if this bill doesn't pass? What is the effect on failure or passage of this bill regarding this vessel's ability to fish this stock out?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johansson, if HB 16 does not pass, the state waters would be open to entry to any vessel that wanted to participate in the scallop fishery, be it a 58-foot seiner from Homer or the Mr. Big or, one of the other vessels that are, maybe were displaced from the crab fishery, or that it would be open until or unless some other form of limited entry came into effect. So I actually, it's interesting, I was involved in the original Mr. Big case, and I remember that quite well.
So it's quite...
Representative Johansson, follow up.
So it's possible that this, whatever, 160-foot South Carolina trawler could just come in and do what they did before and just scoop up and take care of business?
They could come in and fish. They would have to follow all the regulations, and there would be, you know, in whichever bed they were in, if they registered for state waters, first, there's only those three scallop beds that cross over into state waters, so they couldn't fish in any of the scallop beds that are outside state waters because they don't have a federal permit. And I understand that they're suing the federal government as well to get a federal permit. In the state waters fishery, if the board were to adopt what we've proposed, then they would have to register for state waters. They could only fish in state waters. They'd have an observer. They'd be calling in daily to report their catch. They'd have a VMS on board so we could track them. So they certainly, you know, if they're a large efficient vessel, you know, they would potentially harvest that guideline harvest level maybe more quickly than you know a number of smaller boats would, but their activities I think would be pretty well controlled.
Sure.
But
thank you.
And Mr. Hilsinger, could you give us a little background on the difference between the situation now and the situation when the Mr. Big was here and participated in the federal fishery and not in the state water fishery?
Mr. Chairman, this is reaching back, but my memory at the time, I think there was no fishery management plan for scallops, and a vessel...
That's in the federal waters?
Yeah. A vessel that was licensed in state waters then... would have to follow state regulations. And what they did was they actually turned in their state registration, so they weren't registered or licensed at all. And they were out in federal waters fishing indiscriminately. And we got the federal government to close federal waters, and it was closed for, I think, about a year and a half, if I remember correctly, and then when it reopened, it was under a fishery management plan, and I think that's probably when the delegation to the state came in. So we do have a quite a bit tighter regulatory environment now than we had then, but as you know, rules often only work for honest people. That would be my concern.
Sure, and I can understand that. Representative Wilson, then Ledoux.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I understand, and I apologize, I wasn't here to hear all the testimony, so if I'm repeating something that someone else said, just let me know. But if we don't pass this, this would be the first time that... that we've stopped any kind of limited access fishery in the state's history, right? If we don't pass this, then it's kind of like all bets are off type of situation, and it throws us into a situation where even though they would have to follow certain rules, because you might not have the people or the staff to take care, do all that stuff, because I know lots of times you don't. Well. Then what would happen is that it's possible that the stability of the fishery would just not be there anymore. Now, I've got grave concerns about that, and the economic viability of that fishery is very, very important. So it sounds like to me it's pretty critical that we pass this. Do you have any comments about that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, we support the passage of the bill. I'm not aware of another fishery that was limited entry that's gone unlimited, but We do have representatives here from the Limited Entry Commission. If there was, that I'm not aware of. The vessel-based limited entry system has worked pretty well. It's provided a sustainable fishery that's manageable, but it does limit participation somewhat, and which is part of the reason why that option was chosen initially. When the Limited Entry Commission did their analysis under the more traditional individual-based limited entry system, they determined, I think, that there would be something like 27 limited entry permits rather than 9, and they felt that 27 was too many. So the, you know, probably in a situation where it was open to entry, the economics of the fishery would govern how many vessels were there and whether or not there was a large influx. And as I said earlier, right now we don't have a good sense of how many vessels that would be and whether or not it would create a significant management problem. And if it did, I guess, and if HB 16 doesn't pass, and if there is that problem, then the board would have to look at more restrictions in state waters, which could include limitations on gear or some of the other things that people suggested, trip limits and some of those things, and which certainly would affect the economics of the fishery. And, you know, I don't have a good sense right now of how or, you know, where it would become uneconomical or how that might play out. But that certainly would be a concern. And it's been a concern of mine, I guess, that, you know, we want to maintain a viable fishery. And so we want to be sure that the regulations we do have in place don't make it not a viable fishery, and that's, I think, is a real strong reason that the board takes it up in a public meeting and gets input from all the fishermen, and they can kind of assess the effects of some of these things on the fishery. And ultimately, if we find that it's not a manageable situation, we could close areas. We always have that emergency order authority to just close the fishery in a given area if we can't manage it.
Mr. Chairman, I just am concerned that sometimes in a situation like this, it might be a problem that by the time it's realized, it would be too late. And I would hate for it to be, you know, I think that in this situation that we definitely don't want to jeopardize anything, and we could, so I am very concerned about that. And
Representative Wilson, I'm sorry you missed their presentation, because they're talking about daily catch reporting, vessel management, vessel monitoring system, so they know where the vessels are at all times. Having retaining the vessel observers on board so that they'll monitor those catches. So many of those items are in their proposal to the Board of Fish that are exactly covering what you are talking about. And also we have the, I think there'll probably be proposals from the fishermen for a limitation on the gear instead of the maximum amount of gear that's used in federal waters that'll come to the Board of Fisheries as well. So. Just so you know that's in their presentation.
And in the
proposal they're making.
I was aware of that, but still there is the possibility. Why, if it's working now, why change? Yeah, I guess that's where I'm coming from.
And we'll get to that in committee discussion, I guess. Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, just going back to the Mr. Big situation just for a second, and this may be beyond your purview, but I guess I was just wondering that if this goes, fisheries goes open access, is there any legal rationale for excluding the Mr. Big, other than maybe people are a little bit annoyed that they exploited a loophole?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, I don't think if it was open to access that we could exclude the Mr. Big. I'm not aware of any way that we could do that. There's regulations that allow closures due to illegal fishing, but that would close the entire fishery to everybody. There's no way that I'm aware of that, other than, you know, sanctions against him individually. If we were to catch him, we couldn't just exclude him from the fishery.
Representative Ledoux, follow up.
Assuming that he was doing anything illegal at the, I mean, you just said closing for illegal fishing, but if he was in it with a permit, he wouldn't be illegally fishing, would he?
No, and I wouldn't assume that necessarily that he would be illegally fishing. That's the only situation that I'm aware of where we've got regulations that allow us to do something because of illegal fishing, other than cite the individual that's involved. I'm not aware that we've ever been able to exclude a person from a fishery because we're concerned about what he might be doing. I mean, he would have to be doing something illegal. We would have to catch him. He'd get cited under the normal process, and I don't think we could exclude him from the fishery.
And follow up, Representative Ledoux.
And they weren't, were they ever even cited for anything?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I tend to think they were, but I really don't know. I know that the Wolstead went out and stopped them and sent them packing, but whether they were actually cited or not, again, we have some of the people from the Limited Entry Commission here are probably maybe remember that a little better than I do. But
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions for the department? Seeing none, thank you very much. And thank you for your presentation on that. And you'll be going forward with that at the March 3rd meeting. You'll be making your presentation to the Board of Fisheries. Is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. We also had the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission wanted to address us on the issue, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the purpose for the letter that I sent you was to just encourage a hearing in hopes that there would be more discussion of the bill. And so I don't have a presentation. I just wanted the committee to, you know, look at the bill and hopefully that you would take some action on it.
Was there any change in this last year on the participation in vessels? We'd gotten down to 3 vessels at the last count. We're harvesting all the scallops in the state of Alaska. Did that change at all in this last year?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay.
The guideline harvest level is about 500,000 pounds of shuck scallops, and that's the total available for all vessels. So 3 can do that.
And actually, that could be 1, right?
Under
the current program.
Let me say this: one vessel could harvest that many.
That's right, and the current program allows one vessel, if they work in coordination with the other two, one vessel to harvest all of the permit holders and send checks to people on the East Coast, wherever, or New Zealand, or wherever those corporations that own those permits reside. Is that correct?
Well, some of those corporations are a few individuals who formed a corporation. I mean, we're not talking about General Motors or anything, but the guideline harvest of the 500,000 pounds could be harvested by one vessel, and whether there was an agreement or not, if seven vessels chose not to fish, one could take it all.
Right.
And, you know, and part of our, we've got a system in place currently with this vessel-based system where corporations, you don't have to have a participant on board to harvest the scallops. They can receive a check, and we had testimony that they did send checks to people who they fished there. So we could get down to one vessel fishing all the quota in the state of Alaska. At some point in time, we have a constitutional problem of a special right of fishery, which is if we design a system that creates that, and when we're down to three vessels harvesting all the scallops in the state of Alaska, and all Alaskans excluded from that, I fear that we have approached that constitutional problem of a special right of fisheries that we are endowing to a few, and it might get down to one vessel, and controlling that entire fishery. And we also had the testimony from the largest vessel harvesting most of that, that they arranged for freighter to come by and offload their product, so the product actually didn't come into state waters, and we received no state taxes because those product never entered state water and was harvested in federal waters. So, you know, I have a hard time, especially with the other testimony we had from those folks that said that now they don't need to live in Alaska and they've moved to Washington because that's where they overhaul their boat and they're either fishing or down while it's in layup. And so it seems to me that when we look at our determination for the benefit for Alaska, we lose people from the state and from the employment. We lose the number of participants in the fishery down to where I worry that we are into a special right of fishery. And we lose tax revenue because the product doesn't even come on to the state of Alaska. And so even though it may be easier for you to manage one fish, one fisherman, or one vessel harvesting the entire fishery off the state of Alaska, I have a hard time envisioning how that fulfills our constitutional duty to receive the maximum benefit for the people of Alaska. And so I appreciate your letter and appreciate the consideration, but I think the testimony that we received in this committee from the very participants in the fishery means that the structure that we have currently put in place is very problematic to even live within our Constitution. So I appreciate that, and thank you for bringing it forward. And does anyone else have any questions for the commissioner? Yes, Representative Ledoux, and then Wilson.
I guess my question would be, I mean, we're talking about a little bit ago the Mr. Big, and how this one big boat had come in and basically scooped up all of the resources, exploiting a loophole. And it kind of seems to me that enacting legislation or extending legislation, which basically is allowing for just one or two boats to scoop up all of the resources, but doing this under a state-managed system, I guess I don't really see how that's that much different, especially considering that these boats are out-of-state boats, just like the Mr. Big was.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would want to make one comment about going to open access. Going to open access doesn't guarantee anybody you want to have fishing is going to fish. Going to open access means that all of the people that enter the scallop fishery can be non-resident. I mean, there's no guarantee that it's going to be Alaskans that fish if it goes to open access. as far as the Mr. Big is concerned, he was fishing illegally and uncontrolled out there, and that's why they shut the fishery down. Now there's more control on the people that are fishing, and so the opportunity for doing what Mr. Big did back in the 90s isn't there under the current system.
Well, actually, was he fishing? I thought that there wasn't any law against it at the time that he was doing it.
At the time, yes.
So he actually wasn't fishing illegally, if there wasn't any law.
Well, I don't know if it were legally or illegally, but there were no regulations to keep him out.
But the
so
bad,
the only thing they could do was to close the fishery.
But the bad thing about it was that it ended up with just one boat scooping up the resources. And doesn't this very bill allow just one or two boats to scoop up the resources?
Well, the limitation program that we have in place now is regulated, and the boats that are fishing in it have state regulations, and the state manages the state and the federal. So there are controls on them, but one of them could go out and scoop up all the fish if he ignored all of the rules. So I mean, the same thing could happen, but the fishery was closed for a year and a half or 2 years so they could get those rules in place.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, okay, what happens? Now, I know that they're going to put some regulations in place. Now, so what happens? They have to report every day how much they get. But what happens if there's 80 boats out there? I mean, I don't know how many, but, you know, no, you know, so they all go out there, and the first day everybody gets their norm, whatever they can get, and you guys count them all. What happens if they've, you know, that first day, if they've just gone overboard? So what happens then? Do they put them back, or do we just say, uh-oh, and so now we're going to have to close it down for next year? I mean, so tell me what really happens.
Well, it may be a question for one of the managers more clearly, but if all the boats went out the first day and caught all the harvest, then that would be the end of the season. They would just close the fishery.
But what happens, follow-up, Representative?
Representative Wilson.
But I want to know, if one boat can harvest all of this, what's going to happen if all at once, who knows how many boats come in? That's a concern of mine. And another question is, can I have another question? Another question is, we may not be getting the money from the catch in federal waters, but do we, I mean, are we supposed to get that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, there are expenses. These boats that fish have a state license, I mean, so they can come in and out of state waters. It's my understanding that they buy a lot of products to service the vessels on shore, they buy fuel and food and hire crews. Mm-hmm. And so there is some economic exchange going on. And I don't know enough about the comings and goings of these vessels to tell you anything specific in the way of costs that they incur that come into Alaska waters. But most of these vessels come into Alaska waters at some time.
Well, I guess
Representative Wilson, one follow-up.
Sorry. I guess what Representative Seaton made the comment that we're losing money because they're getting rid of their catch of the federal water catch before they come in. Is it allowable for us to tax the catch in federal waters?
I don't know that I know the answer to that.
Is there anybody that could answer those questions?
Representative Wilson, just for a little explanation, if any fish come into delivery, even if it's caught in federal waters, then it is taxed. You have a landing tax or a raw fish tax, which is paid to the state of Alaska. If that is circumvented so that federal product caught in federal waters never enters the state of Alaska by having a tramper come out and you deliver product to them and it never comes in the state waters, they don't have to pay the federal landing or the state landing tax or the state tax. So that is an available option. There's nothing illegal about it. It's just as whether it's a benefit to the state or not to you know, conduct our business that way.
Couldn't we just
and we can't force them to bring their federal fish into it, but this is only talking about the state water fishery anyway, and the state water product that's caught in the state waters, you have to pay the raw fish tax on the fish that are caught in state waters. So there's no problem with these anyway. Representative Johansson.
I'm not sure if the commissioner will remember, but I'd like to hear your response to the chairman's comments that he made prior to the questions, if you remember where he was coming from. I don't want to ask him to do it again. But it looked like you might have had something to say, and we went right to questions. And
the only point I guess I would say in response to that is that the original principle, I guess, that brought this limitation, this vessel limitation program forward was a conservation issue. And the problem that the commission was having in looking at individuals as recipients of individual permits is that there would be too many for the fisheries to sustain. It's only a small fishery, 500,000 pounds of scallops. It can't take a lot of pressure from a lot of vessels. We back before 2002, we identified this issue that our current program of individual limitations wouldn't work very well. There would be three times as many people eligible than the fishery could sustain, or that were even in the fishery at the time, because of the relief skipper. So the legislature passed a bill in 2002 that said for these two fisheries you can use this program of the vessel license program, and which we then incorporated and have been using. And now it's up to the time of taking a look at it after 5 years and see if you want to keep doing this.
Thank you.
And Representative Johansson, I believe that's why the sunset was built into the program, was to reevaluate the program to see if when that was being considered, one of the fears was that by allocating these permits to corporations, it would allow extreme consolidation of the fishery into a few hands. And I think the testimony that we've got from CFEC is that in the past year there were only three vessels participating, and whether you consider that a huge consolidation or not is a judgment on everybody's plate. But that's why the sunset was put into the bill when it was passed. And I think that we've seen the outcome, and some people like the outcome and some people don't. And I appreciate the comments. Representative Johnson and then Representative Edgman, did you have something else?
That was a separate question.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if there's anything that we could do to address Representative Seaton's concern about the limited boats that we could perhaps introduce something that said if a boat doesn't fish for two consecutive years, it loses its permit.
Mr. Chairman, the legislature could pass laws that said things like that. But whether that would be enforceable in the courts, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Johnson.
Everything we do is subject to be enforcement in the courts.
Yes.
And so, especially when you get to the Ninth Circuit.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, and you're aware of this, we have had every year in the 30 years of the commission, we're in court over something.
And just a clarification, Mr. Chairman, were the licenses issued to the vessel or to the vessel owner corporation or the vessel owner?
It was to the vessel, but to the vessel owner. Yes,
to the vessel
owner. That's right.
Okay. Representative Jones.
Mr. Chairman, this may not be appropriate for the time, but I think that this is a situation where we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. This seems to have worked. It seems to be a conservation tool, and if there are some tweaks that we could make to it to address some of the chairman's concerns as to limiting the number of boats that can fish, possibly just off the top of my head, there's one option. I would certainly hate to see us abandon a program that appears to maybe have fallen short on one side, which is the, you know, the consolidation, but I certainly think that the resource has been protected, and at some point, you know, we have to elevate the resource, and I think constitutionally that's what we're charged with. Just like you're saying, you know, we have constitutional issues. I think that we have provided over the last 5 years an opportunity for the resource to thrive, and we have an equal constitutional obligation to do that as we do to not consolidate the fisheries, as you'd mentioned. So at some point we need to weigh it. I would just certainly hate to see a program that has been successful thrown away when I think some tweaks are in order as opposed to a total crucifixion or abandonment of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
How many of the boats that, if they're of the three, how many of them are the that where they've fishermen have agreed to, I won't take my boat out and you go ahead and fish and then we'll divide it with the cost of fuel for the boats. I can see why they have done that, and everybody, it's a win-win for everybody in that situation. So the fact that it's gotten down to just three boats, isn't necessarily the, I don't think we should be concerned about that, because there's still a lot of fishermen that are benefiting from that. So how many of those are corporation type situations where they have decided to do that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to think if I can give you a specific number, but most of the vessels that are out there are owned by corporations. But they're small corporations. They're two or three people, or they could be some larger. But even the vessels that fish in state waters, the smaller vessels, at least one of those is incorporated. So the corporation part of it is not, it's not a, they're not big corporations, is what I'm trying to say, I guess. And what they do by consolidating is an option that is actually available to any fishery anywhere. I mean, people can join together and say, let's go fishing and we'll use my boat instead of your boat to save some money, and then we'll split the difference. I mean, and these agreements are certainly acceptable within the laws and regulations to do. They probably provide a more manageable system, because there's only a few boats out there doing this, and they have a have established a system that works pretty well. If they were all out there, I think that you're right, they probably would all have to incur more costs if they were all doing it individually. So they have gone together and said, well, let's get together and do this, and we'll harvest the same amount, but we'll split it up this way. So it's a sort of a balancing act for them with the economics of their fishery, and it's an acceptable thing to do. So, but that's kind of a policy call of whether you want that kind of thing to happen or not. And when this bill was passed in 2002, it only gave the commission the opportunity to have this kind of a limitation program for only these two fisheries, because the legislature at the time didn't want to open it up. But it seemed to make sense in these two fisheries where there were a lot of participants. So that's what happened in 2002, and that's what we have.
Representative Lydia.
Well, when you talk about the two fisheries in which there were a lot of participants, the hair crab fishery, if I'm correct, that hasn't even been opened during the course of this.
That's correct.
So you really have no history with respect to the hair crab fishery as to whether this has been working or not working.
Mr. Chairman, they did this in the hair crab for the same reason of relief skippers. There were a lot of skippers involved. It has not been opened, you're correct. The protection, I guess, that you could look at for the hair crab is that with a limited number of people, as the resource improves, they could open it again, because they know there's a known quantity of how many are going to participate. But if the hair crab would have been limited on the old system, there might be three times as many participants. So it's just a matter that they could have more control over the next opening of it, if it ever opens.
And Representative Ledoux.
Was the hair crab fishery open when the legislation was enacted?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe it was.
Representative.
Anybody have any idea how long it's been closed?
Probably about 8 years, but maybe one of the managers knows.
So it almost seems to me that as far as the hair crab fishery is concerned, forgetting the scallop fishery, but as far as the hair crab fishery, it was like fixing a problem which didn't exist.
Mr. Chairman, probably in the hair crab fishery, you have more Alaskan participation in the way of businesses, particularly out in westward Alaska, that are at least protected to the point where if the fishery opens again, they would be able to participate in a limited number, because we've limited the number.
And I think, Commissioner, we need to, when we say participate, we need to clarify that this is the only fishery in which you don't have to participate in it to reap the rewards of the fishery. Because anyone else has to be present, has to be a natural person in the presence of the gear when the gear is operating. And in this situation that we've created, we have a corporation sitting in Rhode Island or wherever else that does not have to even have anyone here to participate. They just have to have somebody sharecrop for them, take the fish and send them a check, and they own the resource. And so that this is quite a different system than that in which we have fishermen that participate in the fishery. Here we have the situation that we created, which is the perfect sharecropper system, which is exactly what's happening now with the so-called co-op, but it's not people getting together to harvest a resource. Someone else harvests a resource that they own from some other part of the United States, and we send them a check for part of the Alaska resource amount. So that's been my problem with the structure of this system. And are there further questions for the commission? Seeing none, we are pleased to see that you are working on fisheries management techniques that will control and make sure that this is a sustainable fishery. And we look forward to the outcome of the Board of Fish and appreciate your attendance. And we will be adjourned. It's 9:57.